You're listening to Kiwi Roots Rugby Podcast. Let's go!
Cool. Kia ora whānau. Welcome back to Kiwi Roots Rugby. Today, I'll be hosting you guys. I'm joined by my trusty partner, Scotty Poynton. And we also have a very special guest today, joining us all the way from Toronto, Canada. Today, he's trialing to be our international correspondent. Mikey Cody, how are you?
Boys, I'm good. Living a dream over here in Toronto, but then obviously dialing in every week and listening to you guys chat code, and I'm just absolutely loving it. Even though it's been a little bit of a, you know, interesting time with the All Blacks at the moment, I've actually become totally, you know, invested, and I'm like everyone else in New Zealand, I've become an expert overnight, and I'm just, yeah, really happy to chop it up with you guys tonight.
Oosh, and we're excited to have you on. One question, though, now that you're all the way over in Toronto, have you been converted or are you still All Blacks hard?
Converted to who? The
Canadian team? Mate, they're struggling over there, mate.
The team we pumped by 100 points at the last World Cup.
Okay.
Definitely not, but I'll tell you one thing, though. I do, like, I hang out with a massive contingent of Irish people. My girlfriend's Irish. Pretty much every mate that I have here is Irish, so it has actually been a pretty tough 6 weeks for me. And it's I've just had to live with a lot of, you know, stuff being thrown my way that I have not appreciated. So it was good to see the boys kind of get back a little bit. But yeah, it's been a tough 6 weeks for me.
Irish, well, don't worry, Mikey. Today we've got your back, and you could clap back at some of those critiques coming the All Blacks way. So how about we stay with you and just go around the table and just have some quick thoughts, initial thoughts, we call them, around last weekend's game against the Springboks. So what do you think, Mikey?
It was like an awesome result. I don't know, man. It's crazy. It's just thrown in another wrinkle into this last 6 weeks that's been pretty unknown territory for a lot of All Black supporters. Like I said, I've actually found it like quite fascinating because, like, for so long we've just been this you know, untouchable organization. We've kind of been a little bit like cocky, I guess, and saying, you know, oh, it's the All Blacks, like 60th minute, here we go. Yeah. Watch what happens.
Yeah.
And for the first time, you know, we've been clearly a bit rattled. People have started turning on each other. There's loads of stuff I'm sure we're going to talk about in terms of the organization and things like that. But in terms of the game, like that first try when, I think it was the first try when Sam Kane went in on the corner, I actually got a bit of nostalgia, and it reminded me, I almost had an instant flashback to like Richie McCaw, you know, scoring those tries like he used to on the wing. And so the reason I bring that up is I reckon it was like a result of them finally going back to like sustained pressure, really nice patterns in terms of going side to side, spreading the Springboks, you know, really thin by going, you know, left to right. And, you know, obviously it resulted in that try in the corner. And it was the reason why I'm saying it was nostalgic is because, like, as you guys have discussed, like so much of our attack is that has turned into this like unstructured counterattack, and, you know, Bowden Barrett, individual brilliance. So it was just like, it's so weird. Like, I'd never thought I'd get so fired up over like slow, well-organized rugby, but, you know, we all love the razzle dazzle, but this was like just, you know, perfection and just really nice to watch.
Nice. Scott, you got something to add to that?
I was actually just thinking when you were talking about Sam Kane's try, like, I don't know if it was just them or just me, but almost like the relief and the kick in the media's face. No, it was like, it's hard to explain, but if you wanted anyone to score that try, it was Sam Kane. After all the criticism he's received over the last 4 weeks, it was like, you know, get that up, yeah. But anyway, in terms of the game, 35-23, what a match, a dog fight. Both teams certainly came to play. It was a game, physical, fast. I really enjoyed the atmosphere once again. Ellis Park did not disappoint. The crowd was passionate and loud. Of course, there's the history that is involved, the rivalry, and just full of excitement. So it was so awesome to see from that front. You couldn't barely hear Aaron Smith during the haka, but however they performed it the best they could. But yeah, look, I'm just stoked to see the All Blacks, you know, put out a performance we can all sort of be proud of, and getting the win. And I really enjoyed, particularly after their last try, just the jubilation, the relief, and the happiness, the genuine happiness on their faces to finally just kick that voodoo, get a win against all odds, backs against the wall, worth getting up at 2:30 a.m. There you go.
That is great commitment, Scotty. And you guys have all touched on it, so I won't elaborate too much, but on a personal note, I was probably the only one disappointed when Scott Barrett scored that last try. Let's not forget, back at our previous episode, we were to guess the scores. And boy, when the All Blacks were sitting on 28, I picked the split pretty close. I picked 28-21, and it was 28-23. Scott Barrett scores that try in the 78th minute. I'm like, damn it. Damn you, Scott Barrett. Probably the only Kiwi guy not happy with that try. But, you know, can't have it all your way. All Blacks get the much-needed dub and all this pressure. Can I say relieved or somewhat still lingering in the background? Today, folks, let's get into it. So I guess I want to kick off this new segment by just introducing it first. We'll call it peaks and troughs. Obviously, peaks represent the highs / positives of the game, and the troughs, things that weren't so great. So we'll go around and we'll pick one each. I'll kick it back to you, Scotty. What was a peak that you saw from this game? You can pick either team, and we'll just go from there, right?
I'm actually going to start with the home team, the Springboks. One of the peaks that I want to bring up is actually just their amazing ball skills. I mean, New Zealand have been known for that for such a long time, and it was great to see the Springboks bringing that out and the success they were having, particularly out wide. They were getting a lot of ball out to Lukanyo Arm and Mapimpi Willemsi, and they were tearing the show up and causing us a lot of headache. Kudos to the All Blacks defense, scrambling. They obviously got a couple of tries in there, but yeah, I was really impressed with the way they were moving the ball. Obviously, the kick wasn't working so great for them, but we saw glimpses of it in game one, even when they were going wide. And I sort of wondered why they didn't go there more often. But yeah, really impressed with their ball skills, eh? Right up there at the moment.
And just over to you, Mikey. Do you have a trough for us?
Ooh. So something that's really bad, right?
Yeah.
How about Caleb Clark's tackle?
That's tackle.
That looked like something straight out of the Mikey Cody highlight reel. That attempt of a tackle. I thought that was like a bit of a weird like blemish. Like everything was so competitive, and then it was like, then you literally saw something that, like, you know, most players would have just, you know, done that in their sleep. So I'm being a bit, you know, I guess I probably could find a few more detailed, you know, low points from that game. But like, yeah, that was like the crazy one for me. It was just a bit like, it didn't really fit the rest of the game, which is like a massive mistake.
He had him for all money too. Arms wrapped around and everything. And he just slid off. Like Lucanio arm is like ice or something. What the hell's going on here? That actually forced Will Jordan to hold off, didn't it?
Yeah.
Feels. I think those boys got stuck into the Vaseline before the game or something, because, I don't know what was going on there.
I've got another trough or negative for the All Blacks, and it came in the first half. Before you mentioned Sam Kane scoring that try in the corner, and that was a huge sigh of relief, but before that, there were some pretty key moments. They survived a yellow card period, and All Blacks weren't able to get any points from that. And I think that led to, was it was it a turnover on ruck ball or was that an intercept from Peter Steph-Detoy? One of those two plays, and they're gunning it all the way down on our goal line, and they managed that 10-minute period with what's his face, the fullback guy, you just said his name, Damian Williamsey in the bin.
Yeah.
So I was thinking to myself, oh dude, it's gonna be another tough day in the office. Luckily that Sam Kane try sort of helped relieve those doubts. Scotty, I'm flicking back to you. Oh, you go.
I was just gonna say, how good was that scramble defense on that Detroit
play?
It looked like he was in for all money, eh? He had a good like 10-meter head start, plus the players had to turn around. But I was actually most impressed with, obviously, Jordy Barrett's tackle. That's one thing. Cleaned him out. And Detoy, I can imagine, is not a small guy. And he really chopped him down like anything. But then when the cameras flipped, there was probably about four other All Blacks there ready to defend. They blocked their offload. They got round behind the ruck and obviously caused the held up over the try line with the dropout. Yeah, I thought that was probably a peak at once. It's to a certain degree just that desperation. We've seen it already, but man, any other team that was a try for all money.
Mm-hmm.
Well, dude, the offload you spoke about went to none other than Lucanio Armu just bursting onto that ball, and then Rico Ioane puts in the try saving tackle. You're right, that scramble from that bunch of four or five players was immense.
Yeah, I think didn't Moanga get back there as well? He had like a cheeky little hand in there to keep that held up, and he was the one that threw the intercept. So, you know, I've been there before. When you throw one, you're going to be the one guy that's busting your ass to get back there. So I totally agree with you, Scotty. When that scramble defense happened, it was like, man, like these guys are going to die on this field before, you know, they're up for it.
Yeah.
Today, like it was a really, really cool moment in the game there.
Can I just add before we move on, just quickly around that scramble defense, Jordy Barrett, man, he really stood up, not just this weekend, but in the series overall. And I think people are starting to appreciate his physical nature that he brings in the fullback jersey, that not a lot of we haven't seen that from the fullbacks of yesteryear. This guy has got the boot, he's got the tackle and the running game. He's becoming one of the premier fullbacks in the world. Do we think he has both hands on that 15 jersey, or is Will Jordan a lot closer than I'd like to think?
Yeah, that's a real good point, Felix, because I'm just thinking, like, has there ever been a taller fullback? And like you talk about, you know, diffusing the high ball in that's like having like an AFL guy at the back,
totally.
You know, just taking all these speckies all day. So that's an interesting thing. And like, not to derail the conversation, but like, there's been a lot of performances where I feel like positions are kind of still up for grabs. Like you talked about Artie moving to eight, you know, you've got Jordy now, you know, finally getting some reps in the 15 jersey. And you there's this interesting thing that you've got to consider. It's like, you know, guys need time in the saddle and you've only got a year left or whatever. So that's the toss up. It's like, we've got so many options. Obviously Will Jordan just like does everything right to deserve a chance there too. But then it is that interesting conversation, because you're like, well, we look at his body type, we look at the strategy of teams just going to, you know, bomb it high to us all day. It reminds me a little bit of that strategy Wayne Smith brought in when he put, you know, converted Richard Kahui to a winger to, like, you know, they created the bomb squad in 2011 to, you know, and they dropped Sidivini Sivivasu, who was like the best winger in New Zealand at the moment. Everyone couldn't believe it, but it was like based off a well-calculated plan. So it's interesting because, you know, Will Jordan might be a better runner. He might be doing more things. But then tactically, it's like, well, we got a guy that can defuse high balls. We've got a guy that can kick 55, almost 60 meters. Yeah. Do we just give him time in the saddle? And then by the World Cup, he's just like a bit of a unicorn back there, you know?
Super, I think you're right. Yeah. time in the saddle, definitely. The question I would probably pose is, well, what happens if he gets injured? He's putting his body on the line week in, week out, catching those high balls. And we saw what happened to the bloody Bodie the week prior.
Yeah.
Anything can happen. But you're right. You've got two guys who need time in the saddle. Do we just train one up to be the master, one to be his pad one, and just pray to the Lords that he doesn't get injured? But even then, I think, yeah, Jordy Barrett should definitely stay at the back. I think Will Jordan, I mean, he's getting his chance on the wing, but there's just some inaccuracies in his game at the moment that I don't know if I want that at the back there. And Jordy Barrett's courageous defence. Does Will Jordan make that type of tackle on Dutoit, where he just throws his body on the line? Yeah. I don't think so. He might not even just have the mass behind him to actually cause that amount of force to stop him in his tracks. So, I do wonder. But he certainly went from, you know, zero to hero in the space of a week when it comes to that high ball. Because last week she was pretty shocking. And I was actually thinking we were going to see a Will Jordan feature in that 15 jersey. But it's amazing what you can do in a week, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Quick question for you, though, you two. Do you think Tui Vasa's kind of been, I don't know, I feel like we've kind of lumped him into the midfield category quite early. And you just think back to his NRL career. Like, he would take like 30, you know, not 30, but he'd take like 20 high balls a game. Every set he's catching a high ball. He had like the most amazing scramble defense. Like, he had, you know, I think that year he won Dally M. He was like holding guys up at the line. Do you think they've kind of shuffled him into that category like pretty early? And do you not? I don't know. I'm just interested. I'd love to see him at least have one little go, you know, at wing or fullback, but when he's got an All Black side in front of him, because we've done that in the past with, like, you know, guys like Milner Scudder, where, you know, they can do really well on the wing when they're in like a really good system.
I can't remember what episode it was, but I think we touched on it briefly, Mikey, that I think second five was perhaps the one position that looked a bit light in the All Blacks ranks. And if you're NZR/All Blacks paying, forking out a lot of money for this prized possession of a footy player, how on earth do you fit him in, not just positionally, but contractually as well? You don't need to convince me. I want to see Tui Vasashek at the back 100%. But both Barrett and Will Jordan are putting in some pretty strong performances. And I think up until now, like this game with David Havili and Rika Ioane, the midfield has been pretty up and down, I think. I think you just had to squeeze them in there somewhere. I know that's not the perfect answer, but, man, roll the guy out, I say. Go on, Scotty. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I would like to see him at the back there. I do think that strategically they put him in the centres just to fast-track him as much as possible into the All Blacks. There is probably a, you know, conspiracy theory that it is a marketing ploy, getting Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, one of the biggest NRL players in the game, over to the New Zealand scene and chucking him in the All Blacks. He's going to attract a lot more fans and potential reach, and I don't know, put him in an All Blacks jersey and, you know, posing for the cameras, etc. But a lot of those points you bring up, Mikey, are very valid, and I wouldn't mind seeing him at the back there as well. But probably not going to see it, are we? Never know. Super Rugby next year. How about that?
For the Hurricanes, maybe.
There we go. Bring him south.
Yeah.
I think we've been quite critical of the All Blacks, and rightly so. But let's not forget the Springboks, Scotty, made some mistakes themselves. Were there any that sing out to you? Were some areas of concern, or perhaps phases and moments where you thought they were just a little off the pace?
Right. Why was Malcolm Marks not starting? Jeepers, after one of the best 50th caps ever. And how many steals did he get? His awesome line-out throwing. I think he probably did one bad throw, but still, Dweeba, the muscle man, he he had a bit of a shocker, eh? a lot of opportunities gone begging for that team. You know, 20 meters out. I mean, let's be honest, the maul wasn't working too great, but gosh, hard to stop Lucanio Arm or any of those outside backs 20 meters out. Mm. Yeah, I think they should have kept with that Malcolm Mark start for continuity and that disrupting at the ruck, because they were struggling to disrupt All Blacks ball this week. And perhaps that's kudos. I was watching the All Blacks a bit closer in that department. You could see that their support players were just getting right on there.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was no one really in there, like just trying to disrupt and get amongst it and slow the ball down. And it probably paid dividends near the end of the game. You see the last try they scored, or last two tries, you know, All Blacks are 5 meters out attacking, pick and go. And I was actually watching like their loosies walking. You know, I was like, what are you doing? Like, and of course, like, I'm referring to the try that
David Havili scored. Yeah.
Right. Mm. Detroit's walking. Who's that dude that looks like the guy from the Fantastic Family? What are they called?
Diego?
The blonde head. No, not Diego.
Visa.
Visa. The other guy. The blondie.
Detroit.
I think he's a prop, actually, not Detroit. Nah, one of the props. He looks like Captain Fantastic or...
Ah, bro, that's going to
kill me. You know who I'm talking about. We got to Google that shit. You do the Googling while I carry on anyway. But I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, my gosh. Like, of course, that was the tactic. If you look at how the subs all worked out, I mean, South Africa tried to drip feed it from, what, the 30th minute? And the All Blacks just piled them in probably between that 60-minute mark, maybe 50 to 60-minute mark, somewhere in there. Reinforcements came piling in, and, yeah, we maintained that speed of play throughout the remainder of the match, which really got us through. But I'm going to go back to it. Malcolm Mark should have been there. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he would have made a big difference, and perhaps they would have capitalized on a few more scoring opportunities. There you go.
Yeah, I'll just add quickly, you know, the Springboks really do thrive off of that pressure at the breakdown, eh? And that had to be the contrasting factor between the games one and two. And that's like a staple of their pressure. If they're not getting, you know, good go forward ball, they could live off scrap, so to speak, off of that breakdown pressure and really just suffocate you like they did so successfully in game one. Those adjustments that the All Blacks made, you have to say, were a masterstroke. And the urgency and the breakdown really forced the South Africans to go, oh, plan B, and which played right into the All Blacks' hands, expansive play out the back, and... Mm. What you're alluding to, Scott, is Springboks fatigue. There were times, many times during that game, where they were just run off their feet, and you can see not just props, but everyone walking. Eh? So, man, to round up this subject, man, you'd have to say what a difference a week can make. Eh? And just glad that it was a fairly convincing win the All Blacks way. Not like a last-minute drop goal or anything like that. So kudos to the boys for turning stuff around in such a short amount of time.
Mm. Can I just add, because we've sort of talked about the South African forwards, but guys, we've got to give a round of applause to the New Zealand forwards, don't we?
Yeah.
Okay. Mine was okay. I'll edit in the clap there, an applause.
Yeah, spot the front rower on the pod.
Right. Like, they did an amazing job. I mean, look at the first test when we were, like, losing all those scrums and we bring in this whole new forward pack. Pretty much brand new front row, minus Tokiaho, but sheepers, man, they stood up in that match, both physically in the scrum, around the park, tackles. There was a lot of big hits. I don't know if you saw Tyrell Lomax dropped a few bombs there with Visa running it straight. I was like, let's go. That's what we need. That shit amps you up, man. Like, gets you up. And so I was, my thing here was, I think bringing in Jason Ryan was absolutely the best move out of all this debacle that's gone on. Yeah, it sucks that two people lost their job, but the impact Jason Ryan has actually had on this team. And I'm going to start a new conspiracy theory, but I reckon Scotty Robinson is actually, you know, on the phone to him each week, but maybe not.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird situation because it's like you have this guy that got the job, and I don't, obviously we'll talk about Foster later, but yeah, Scotty, it's kind of like you literally take Razor's right arm, and then all of a sudden the All Blacks get like incrementally, you know, better. They get a little bit better.
Right.
And you're kind of thinking to yourself, you know, it's amazing that we just won. But it's like, what if we just had the full coaching team there, you know, Razor?
Yeah, the possibilities.
I was going to say on your point, Scotty, with the forwards, every now and then, like one of my most favorite All Black performances, and maybe it's because I was hanging around a bunch of Irish guys, but I absolutely love this game. And a lot of people like don't even remember it, but it was like a couple of years ago after we lost in Chicago, which was pretty embarrassing. If you rewatch that second game, every now and then the All Blacks, like, we're so known for like razzle dazzle. We're so known for like, you know, forwards that are amazing ball players, playmakers. Yeah. But every now and then they kind of like remind the world, like if it was pouring rain outside and it was a muddy field, like our forwards will still own you if we want to. And like they cut out all the fancy stuff and they just go, you know what, like, let's go hit these guys. Let's get a little bit dirty. And like, if you rewatch that Irish game, that's exactly what they did. They were just absolute mongrels. Like Colsey was almost having a scrap every ruck. Like even guys that you didn't think he had it in them were just laying down these hits. And that I love that stuff. Even, I don't know if you guys remember, but I was G'd up sitting in my seat when they did that kind of cheap shot on Aaron Smith and the boys were just straight on him.
Yeah,
I was like, I think he like fell over, but I liked his intention. I was judging him by his reaction time, not the end result. But I love that. I was like, yes, let's go. You know, like don't remind these guys who you are. You know, it was awesome. I loved that kind of physicality.
Yeah, because that stuff, that all contributes to the overall sort of mind games, especially when you're in those dark places and the breakdown, the scrums, all those physical encounters tend to add up. And it's like, hey, I remember that last one. I'm going to get you back. We all know that one. So you go.
Yeah, you make a good point there, Felix. That's the kind of stuff that takes players away from the game plan, because they start focusing on personal grievances and trying to get revenge and get back at the other players, gave them a little punch in the middle of a ruck or something, or, you know, yeah, ruck them at the bottom of the ruck or, yeah, whatever. But it's that kind of niggle that just puts people off. I'm sure that the South Africans love that sort of game because they are the epitome of tough rugby, right? Yeah. They love to bring it. I don't think they like it when teams bring it back to them, though, you know? And that's why I'm so proud of the All Blacks forwards this week. The whole compliment from the starting to the bench, everybody played their hand. Guys were putting their hand up to run the ball, even if they didn't make any meters. It was tough contact. It was solid, and it made them work for it, you know? And we all know that it's freaking hard to just keep getting up and putting in big tackles one after the other, after the other, after the other, and then you have to chase the backs out wide. It's tough work, man. That's why, I'm really stoked for these boys.
Okay, just to finish this up, Scotty, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do we keep that starting front row after such a strong performance against arguably one of the best in the world?
I think you have to, man. You got two players there who have both been dropped from the All Blacks, and they're hungry to get back in that team, and they're hungry to stay there. They performed. They held up one of the biggest scrums in the world. They're quick around the park. Yeah, I think that they did the business and they deserve the right to maintain their spots and stay there. So good on them. I love it.
A lot of improvements, Scotty has mentioned, especially in that front row. And that leads us right into our awards section. And what better category to start off than those who have improved the most these last two weekends? Mikey, I'm gonna throw it over to you. And what we'll do is we'll chuck a name each into the hat, discuss our winner before moving on to the next category. How does that sound?
Sounds good. So I found this one. So most improved, right? So
yeah.
Yeah, I found this one really tough. And I had a few names down, but I'm going to go a little bit, you know, off the beaten path. And I'm going to go with Scotty Barrett. I for those reasons that Scotty Poynton just mentioned, I loved like his aggression. Like I just thought I haven't really one of those guys that kind of surprised me. I was like, man, like look at this guy. He is so fit. Like he doesn't stop. Yeah. He just goes, he's not one of those lumbering slow locks. Like he is agile, aggressive.
Yeah.
And I know it's like one of those picks that it's pretty subtle and it might like, he's not like someone that, you know, jumps out, but like I think it was like when Artie like put, I think he thought Artie scored that try, but he was like laying into the South Africans. And I think, you know, if we summarize how the team looked a bit flat and they didn't want it, and we talk about all those emotions that were missing in the Irish test matches, I just thought like, man, like he like went up another level, and it's like he's young, he's going to get better, and I just loved his like his physicality.
Nice pick. Scotty, you got something to add to that, or are you going completely left field on us?
Left field. I don't know. I put down three names and I'm still indecisive on who I would like to select, but woo! I maybe want to touch on perhaps one of the players here who I think's had probably the most impact in the game for most improved. I've actually put down Sam Whitelock. So look, he had three turnovers in the match, seven tackles. He disrupted one of the best lineouts in the world, and just ultimate leadership in that situation they were in. We all could feel the pressure, even from our couch all the way here in New Zealand. You know, you didn't want to make the mistake, but to have someone like Sam Whitelock there to lead the team and lead by example, didn't miss any tackles, done his job really well, completed his core role. Like I said, led by example. Yeah, I don't know if we'd seen a better performance out of him yet in this international season. So he was growing. He had a better performance last week, but I think, yeah, to be able to disrupt the likes of, what are the lock team?
Diaga and Etzebeth.
Diaga and Etzebeth. Yeah, to be able to get in front of them, man, oof, that is amazing. So he's my man. Go on, Felix. Who we got?
Whoa, two All Blacks, man. I don't know. Call me old-fashioned, but I always feel like the most improved player is someone who's come out of relative obscurity. So for this pick, I'm gone for the second string Springboks halfback, Jaden Hendrikse, who stood up in Faf de Klerk's absence after getting KO'd by the infamous Caleb Clark knee in game one. And he stood up, man. Executed their game plan to perfection with his box kicking, accurate passing, and just general gameplay. I thought actually they were going to go to their proper second string halfback, which is that Herschel Yankees dude. But didn't even see him. Hendrikse gets the call up again for game two and puts in another strong performance. Probably should have got himself a meat pie had it not been for Bowden Barrett's obstruction that eventually led to his yellow card. But I'm going old school on this one. I didn't know anything about him. And after these two games, dude's looking like he's pushing Faf de Klerk out the door. So that's my pick, guys. So where are we going with this one? Three completely different players for three completely different reasons. I'm stuck, guys.
I like your one, Felix. Like I like Felix's one. I think like when you have a guy that just like announces himself and you haven't really heard much about him, like that's pretty impressive. He almost got away with like one of the greatest shepherds of all time, and could have won the test match for him. He was so close. If there was a couple rucks before that, you know, if they got tackled and then, you know, done a quick offload and a ruck, they probably wouldn't have checked that. So, but yeah, I like that though, Felix. I reckon that's a pretty awesome way to announce yourself.
Nice. All right, we're 2-1. Hendrikse.
Hendrikse. Yeah, let's Jaden go. Hendrikse. I think he's actually a third string halfback, but there you go. He's the series' most improved player. Man, this is going to get tough, guys. So moving on. We've got the most promising player. And Scotty and I were debating this one. On what on earth does promising mean? Is it the, it's too similar to most valuable. But he's brought up a really good point, which he can relay to you now on what exactly it means.
The way I look at most promising player is somebody who hasn't quite reached their potential, hasn't quite hit their ceiling yet. So we've got a guy who's showing glimpses of greatness, but still has a little way to go. So perhaps generally your slightly younger generation or the new generation coming through, but you know how there's always generational players where at the end of their career, you kind of think, man, what are they going to do when this guy retires? You know, they start from that point of most promising and then become that.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like a Dwayne Vermeulen probably last year or the year before, you'd think, what are they going to do? But now they've got these amazing Lucys coming through the ranks just from out of nowhere. That's what I consider most promising. MVP is, of course, the guys who are the here and now, who are the people that break a game open. So that's where I'm, how I sort of look at it.
Well, it's only fitting that since you explained what it means, that you go ahead and pick your guy and who you believe is the most promising player, Scotty.
Oosh. Okay, I again put down three players, but I'm going to only tell you one. Mate, I was well prepared for this, all right?
Stop being greedy, man.
Boys, I'm going to go with Jasper Visse.
Woo,
man,
nice.
When that guy came on for Dwayne Vermeulen, he absolutely changed the running game and the way they're attacking. Kickoffs was probably a nightmare going deep. I mean, he's solid boy, can run fast, and I could imagine it would bloody hurt your shoulder. I mean, Tyrell Lomax didn't step or shy away from it, but yeah, in the end, what did he play? Like maybe 55 odd minutes, but he racked up a good like 9 or 10 runs and carries, so very much involved. His influence on the game, amazing. A good young player coming through, so I think he is going to be dangerous come next World Cup. And then that cycle after that of international matches. There you go.
Oosh. What about you, Mikey?
Yeah, I had a bit of tunnel vision here. I just went straight All Blacks, eh? For my picks. I wasn't even worried about those jokers in the green jerseys. we're better than them now, eh? That's they're in the past. We've moved on. Nah.
We got the trophy.
I'm glad you did that definition. I think I was on the same wavelength, Scotty. And for me, I put Rico Ioane because I feel like I just need him to, you know, meet Conrad Smith at the airport, go on a romantic holiday over to Fiji, just spend some time together and just pick that guy's brain for like 6 months. Because I think we all see like the raw talent and it's just like he just needs a tiny little bit more experience, bit of nurturing. Like if people are so divided on him, but you've got to think like Martin Onu was insane when he was like 34. You know, like I think I don't even know his age, but you saw that last World Cup. Like it was like, man, is this guy like? Why is this guy retiring? Like he's getting better every year.
Yeah.
And so you've got Rico who's still really young. Center is like I think it's one of those positions that. When you're younger, you just think it's like the biggest guy on the team bashing it up. But when it gets to that ultra professional level that these guys are at, you saw some, you know, goofy, uncoordinated guy like Conrad Smith just dominate that position. And it shows that it's actually, there's so much more to it. It's like you're the defensive technician there. You're the guy that will need to call plays for guys inside of you and scan the space. So, I just think if he can, you know, fine tune some of those skills. It was also interesting seeing him, like, I don't think what All Blacks team has had this in a long time where it's like he often found himself like in that position where he's on the fringe and he has like a big space between the winger and then he's just got his center and he just needs to take him on the outside. Mm. And he did that like 3 times and it's like, man, like this guy's got speed to burn. So I hope they recognize that and actually start setting up a bit of a game plan for him to run like that, you know, instead of maybe trying to like get him to mold into a certain pattern, like, you know, make something a bit more customized for him because he's a bit of a freak at the moment.
Yeah. making his strength shine.
Hey. Yeah. You want to talk about customizable back plays. South Africa certainly did that, shifting Lucanio's arm out to the wing. And then, and that produced a lot of fruits as well. So it can certainly be done. If I were to add one thing about your pick, Mikey, is maybe we just make it clear that we're talking promising in the sense that Rico is a bona fide center / 13, rather, because the argument would be that he's already announced himself as a pretty bona fide athlete / winger, but obviously needs a bit of work on the defensive responsibilities at 13. And honestly, the huge thing about that is probably just the approach between the two players you mentioned, Conrad Smith and Rico Ioane, being blessed with so much like raw athleticism that he quite normally gives off the outside shoulder, knowing full well he can close down that space.
Yeah.
Just their mentality and their approach, whereas Conrad Smith had to approach it a completely different way. So, guys, maybe we chip in for those two to have a romantic trip after all. Because, dude, if he sharpens that bit up about his game, he's arguably going to be on his way to be one of the best. So, here we go. Two very interesting picks, guys. Not that I'm going towards a certain trend or anything, but I've got another South African in Damian Willemse. That fullback is pretty much like he's going toe-to-toe with Jordy Barrett. He's got some nice dinking runs to him for a guy that size. Let's not forget that that chase down he had against Caleb Clark in game one. And a really solid kicking game. This guy could put on the hits. I really like the look of this guy. I seen him a couple of years ago getting running out for, was it the Stormers? And I thought, dude, this guy going to be a Springbok like sometime soon. And here he is starting for the Springboks, pushing out the guy who's normally back there. Oh, gosh. He came on in the second half in wing.
LaRue?
Yeah, Willie LaRue, who's been the cornerstone fullback for many years now. So, yeah, I feel like perhaps there's a trend going on with big physical fullbacks, with him, with the Springboks, Jordy Barrett at the All Blacks, and they've got over in England another huge monster as well, Freddie Stewart. So who knows? I can't really pick this one. Where are we leaning, guys? We've got two Springboks and a converted winger. Where do we want to go? Who is most promising?
So we've got Rico, Jasper Visa, and Willemse. Come on, boys. I don't know. I don't want to give up my position.
I'll piggyback on your pick, Scotty. I think that's it. I think
he was a mean say.
Yeah.
All right, I'll take it. I'm not arguing.
And there was such a huge, huge change when he came on, eh?
Yeah.
For Vermeulen. Influence, mate. I was like, oh, okay. So you get that one. Jasper Visa, our most promising player. So you're probably wondering why on earth I didn't pick Rico Ioane as the most valuable player, and that's for good reason. I had him down as my most valuable player, instead of most promising, for all those reasons you talked about. We'd been waiting for Rico Ioane to have a game like this, and he just completely lights up the field on both ends. Rugby's a contact sport. You can't just be scoring tries. You've got to make the big hits as well and defensive reads. So for those reasons, Rico Ioane is my nomination for this weekend's most valuable player. Who wants to go next?
Go, Coates.
I went for Ardie Sevier because I think this guy is so good that everyone just is used to it now, and we just like kind of expect those performances.
Mm.
But you go back and you watch it, and you're just, the guy is insane, man. Like he doesn't stop, like his physicality doesn't stop from like the first minute to the 80th. He has like all the ball skills. He's distributing things He's catching crossfields. But then the thing that, like, I think a lot of people like sleep on Artie with is, like we were talking about before, like if you just put him in like a, you know, like a muddy school ground and just say you're only allowed to do pick and goes, he would probably be better at doing just pick and goes and doing that real kind of mongrel, you know, non-rewarding forward work as well. And like, I think it's also underestimated. Like I heard you talking about it a couple of weeks ago, Felix, how like he is arguably one of the best sevens in the world. But then it's just interesting because like, it reminds me a little bit of Kieran Reid. Like Kieran Reid was a six for a long time. Mm. And then he made that transition to eight. And it's kind of like, you know, do we just, if he can be this good out of position and he's only like just getting a bit of a roll on and getting used to that position, it's like, do we just let him roll? And you just know how talented he is and how clever he is. He's getting to a point in his career where maybe like it might make sense, like just with injuries and like the toll that it takes on a seven. So maybe it is a smart decision for him to like focus in on eight. I don't know. I just think that like, yeah, we just forget how good he is. And you could hear it when, and I don't know if you got, obviously in New Zealand, you had Nisbo calling it, but like he called the crossfield. He still had like two guys to beat, and Nisbo like acting like he's almost like preempting. He's like, "Well, Artie's going to beat these two guys," and he almost did. And that's the type of like I almost think we as fans can be a bit like complacent and just like we're just like, "Yeah, it's Artie. Like he's always going to be like the best." But and I don't know. Part of me just thinks like it's that legacy discussion, and just like, is this guy going to go down to be like one of the best ever when you think about All Black number eights or Lucy's, you know?
Ooh, that is a tough nut to crack, Scotty. Good luck chasing that one up.
Now, honestly, I was going to go with Artie Savia as well, but before I crack into that and follow on with you, I think Lucanio Arm does need to have some light shined on him. I mean, he's getting on it from a global media perspective, but guys, in a losing effort, 8 carries for 137 meters, 5 defenders beaten and 4 clean breaks. Oh my Lord, what a game from one individual and the other team. Literally, keeping them in the match. But yeah, Artie Savia, you've touched on all of it. Super high workload, super influential, lots of involvements. Two really critical turnovers when the South Africans were getting some real good momentum going. And I was thinking, oh man, here we go. Let a bolt. And then, he comes up with a pearler. Captain mid-game, I was actually quite happy to see Sam Cain get trudged off. And someone else brought on, and then he got the captaincy mid-game. I thought that was a really good tactic, and hopefully we see actually Artie shift into that number seven, perhaps, as you alluded to, in parts of a game. We can bring on a Hoskins to Tutu because that's amazing talent just sitting on the bench or sitting in the stands with a tie around his neck. What a waste. But I totally agree. Artie Savia, we do get complacent and start to expect high things from him on you know, every weekend or weekend, week out, should I say. So, yeah, I reckon, he's my MVP as well.
Yeah, he low-key scored that try as well, I reckon. Based off Scotty Barrett's reaction, you don't start screaming in someone's face and start trash-talking, like, if you're not confident someone in your team's just scored a try. Like, it was that was a pretty funny part of the game there.
Honestly, if Artie scores that try, he becomes the player of the match. That try assist, those crucial turnovers, that try really would have topped it off. I'm not going to argue Artie Savia. Look at me. At any chance I get, I rave about him. So I just try to be like a bit equal and giving Rico his
shout. We all knew, Felix. It doesn't matter, bro. We all knew.
He's the people's champ for a reason because, man, he just doesn't let up. His efforts on the defensive end and the offensive end. Let's not forget, folks, he is a forward. And he's making some backs look like children at this level. It's crazy what this guy can do. Guys, your most valuable player for this weekend, Artie Savia. Man, whew, A lot to cover there, guys.
What does he win, Phil?
Congratulations.
What does he win?
That's a secret between the Usos, mate. Don't you worry.
Whoa. I don't think I want to know what that is.
Yeah.
You can drop him off a Kiwi Roots cap.
Right? Oh, man. But, you know, the media was, can we say, like, quiet or, like,
I don't know how to describe it.
Like, it was quite a weird position for them to be in, given the strong response that the All Blacks put in. I'm a little lost as to what this means for Ian Foster and his position moving forward. Guys, we need to spend some time on this, because if he's able to turn the team around in such a short amount of time, and not just win, but win the All Blacks way, is there still plenty of petrol left in this Ian Foster tank, guys? Who wants to go first on this?
You want me to go, Codes?
Yeah, go on, Scotty.
Guys, I reckon it was so unfair that straight after the game, after an amazing performance, great win, They're already asking him about his job. I thought that was pretty rubbish by the media, to be honest. And he even said, I don't even know what's going to happen. I'm just going to enjoy tonight, which is the right thing to do, eh? You know, instead of thinking about that stuff. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. I think they need to back off. And, yeah, Adi Savea put it quite nicely, talking about, you know, the personal attacks and mental strain it can have on one player. And even he alluded to it in his press conference. He's lost a kilo over the whole bloody debacle. It's pretty tough, eh? I don't think it's fair on him. I mean, yes, he's the head coach, but at the end of the day, it is a team performance, right? There's 30, 40-odd people plus management in the squad that are collectively trying to achieve something. So, you know, yeah, it's easy to just focus on the one guy at the top. I don't know. I'm with the changes that we've seen in the last 2 weeks, I'm still happy to see Ian Foster carry on, as long as we trend in the right direction, because the other thing I was thinking about the other day, actually, is the team looks completely different as well from when Ian Foster had it. And we've had the COVID disruptions in the middle, but you know, we've lost a lot of experienced guys. So you even touched on it before with Rico Ioane and his inexperience and lack of an older head in the team to help coach him through some of the finer points of his position. You know, we don't have a lot of that within this team. I mean, this starting team, you know, what's behind them on sitting on the bench and in the stands? Not a lot of experience, a lot of caps. So we've got to sort of put it into a full perspective here, not just he's the head coach and they're losing, he's got to go. Because that's the easy way out, isn't it? I don't see that as the solution. Coach, there you go. I set you up.
Yeah, well, I agree. I think it's like, as the weeks have gone on at first, I'll admit, like, I was a bit, you know, disappointed in how the team was going against Ireland, and you naturally you go straight to that head coach, but I think, like, I feel really sorry for him, because I think, like, he's in no man's land, because the NZRU are just like, the NZR has just completely thrown him under the bus, and they're not it's been a PR disaster. Like, he's getting the worst guidance and advice. Like, the first head to roll for me would be whoever's, like, his PR consultant, because, like, just the way that they've been guiding him and telling him to run these press conferences. And I looked into it, and I just rewatched, like, a couple press conferences that he had. And I think if you do rewatch it, you can kind of see that he's actually deflecting. He's almost like putting himself up, because he doesn't want the team to be, you know, impacted by it. And he's kind of, he's getting horrible PR advice. He didn't turn up, and I don't think that was his choice. Like, I think he would have just rather just, like, face the music. He says, like, you know, yeah, we've got stuff to do. It's not great. But if they had just let him come out, and I think, you know, the more that he has actually been given exposure and he's allowed to talk, people are actually starting to, like, become more on his side and be like, look, this guy is, like, doing his job as best he can. You're the ones that put him there. If he's your guy, like, stick up for him, and then, you know, and back him. But And I think what kind of backs that up is that point you mentioned about Artie and the way that Artie, you know, was the words he was saying about Foster and how much he respects him. And that's his guy, you know. So clearly there's stuff that we're not seeing where this team is actually, you know, really they feel bad for what he's going through. And like he's kind of just putting himself in the firing line and he's getting it from, you know, the media, he's getting it from NZR. And the one encouraging thing though is I think that because of this win and because like he gets more exposure and he's just talking and he's like, look, I'm just doing my job and like we got to win. They haven't even told me if I have a job when I get home. Now everyone's – the good thing is I think everyone's starting to realize, you know, that they put him in a really horrible position. And, yeah, like hopefully – yeah, I don't think he's done anything wrong. I think he's done his job as best he can. And it's the people above him and it's the organization around him. It's the support he's been given. It's been pretty frustrating and I feel really bad for him.
Yeah, you touched on a lot of good points. And I agree, all the player interviews that I've seen, they all back him. I mean, of course, they're not going to say, yeah, no, I want to get rid of him because they want to be on the park. But they're all backing him, right? And the other point I would like to add on is that, goddamn, all these teams from around the world are playing the best rugby they've ever played. This is probably the hardest international foes we've ever faced, you know? Yeah. The Irish 6 years ago, are they the same team then than they are now with all the talent or the Kiwi influence? I mean, all the talent from Ireland in their squad. So, but, you know.
All the Irish boys that I hang out with, they call James Lowe Seamus Lowe. And they've just completely adopted him. So annoying. It's like...
I think he secretly loves it because you watch him do an interview and he's like, oh, grand this and grand that. And I'm like, oh, yeah, dude, come on. You're a Kiwi.
Drop the accent, brother.
How do you explain those Māori and Pacifica tattoos then, boys? Hey?
Yeah.
The talent across the globe, right? It's uncanny. Yeah. We can't deny it.
But, Scotty, the other – a couple – I think it was like a couple episodes ago, like you rattled off Foster's – some of his record-breaking stats and record-breaking in the bad sense. And, yeah, like, man, it is jarring when you hear those. And it's, like, the only thing that I'll say, and again, like, I don't blame him at all. Like, you look at the organization, and we can talk all day about social media, like, how cruel social media is. Social media is cruel, man. Like, if you go to any other country, any other professional sport, don't forget, the All Blacks are the most successful professional sports franchise in the world. But if you compare the stuff that they receive on social media compared to the likes of Manchester United, guys like Harry Maguire right now and play, you know, it's bomb threats and things like that. And I'm not saying, you know, we should be happy and that's the world. But the point I'm making is like, if the social media and all the pressure, that's something that like, you know, Zuckerberg needs to figure out. And it's a problem with the world right now. But if you just, from what my whole perspective has been like on this, watching this all unfold, is I kind of like annoyed at the NZR and I just don't think it needed to be this like complicated. They were confident in themselves, like just like me or anyone else who has a job that might be like target driven, you know, if you walk into a meeting room and you haven't hit your target the last like, you know, 6 out of 8 quarters or something, that's going to be a tough conversation. And I just feel like they've just hung him out to dry. He doesn't know where he stands. Ultimately, if you're his employer, you've just got to be like, hey, these are our standards. And I don't want to pile on him too much, but the only thing that worries me is like you've got guys like Beauden Barrett is 31, Aaron Smith 33, Richie Mo'unga is getting up there, Artie's 28. Like, do you look back at this crop of players in 15 years and go, man, like, did we just waste like these generational players? Like, and you know, we talked about, you know, Scotty Robertson's assistant coming in and making an instant impact. It's like, well, what would have happened if he had his whole team there? Or that's the only thing that I kind of worry about. And it's probably like far-fetched thinking. And obviously hindsight's a beautiful thing, but there's like this awesome talent pool at the moment. And you just think like, does he get the best out of them right now?
I think to bring it all home, guys, the answer to that question, we just need to look back at that in this one incident in this game, game two against South Africa, and he gets an absolute yes. Man, yeah. All those big name players you referred to all had big games and were a huge part of the All Blacks victory. I, for one, was calling out Ian Foster, calling out for change. It didn't have to be Razor Robinson. It just had to be something different. But look, I also back that up by saying, look, if there are some tricks that they're hiding up their sleeve, now's a good time to play them. And we've seen this more expansive style of game come out of nowhere after getting suffocated in game one. So I'm not trying to get too far ahead of myself, but it seems like the All Blacks probably have some things that they've been hiding in their back pockets, probably to Ian Foster's, to keep him in his position for longer. I don't know. I wouldn't say that New Zealand fans in general are toxic, because like you said, other sports and other areas of the world, they are terrible. And hopefully that's an area that we as fans can clean up on, because we as fans have been getting a lot of stick as well from other members saying that, dude, you guys are just terrible towards your head coach, and we don't want to see professionals, go through the ringer like that. So encouraging signs, like you said, for these players to jump in and bat for their coach. I just hope as a All Blacks fan that they can continue on this upward trend and continue on this rugby championship and bring home the Bledisloe, most importantly. Guys, any final thoughts before we wrap this one up? Who are you looking? Which game are you looking forward to in the rest of the rugby championship calendar?
I'm going to jump in first here. I'm looking forward to the All Blacks playing Argentina after they smoked Australia. Oh yeah, that was a good win on their behalf. So I'm just looking forward to the next game. I just want to keep this train rolling in the right direction. I want to see some more wins. I want to see Ian Foster keep his job. And I want to see him just throw it in the media's faces. And then, I don't know, we'll see what happens after that. I bet you they'll all be bandwagon bloody fans and start praising how amazing he was to come out of adversity. And against all odds, he's the greatest coach in this era. Oh, well, that's good. Anyway, just keep it coming. What do you reckon, Coach?
Me too. Can't wait for Argentina. Tuivasa at the back or wing. I'm starting a promotional campaign. Get it out there, boys. We'll start a hashtag. But yeah, I just hope it's tough. I agree with you, Scotty. I want to see a roll on, but then I'm also like, surely we can experiment a little bit against
not doing Ian Foster any favors, man. But there you have it, folks. So pretty interesting analysis over last weekend's game. Look, tune in again next weekend where we rip into some more All Blacks footy. I'm signing out, your host Felix Filippo from Kiwi Roots Rugby. Thank you. Bye now.
See you next time. Goodbye.